third or fourth wide receiver on my team. I don't need the headache. I'll sign this other guy who's...
Was that a pun? That was a pun.
Did I just make a pun?
The headache. We don't want the headache.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a terrible pun.
Unintentional pun, 5-yard penalty.
I'm too lazy. I'm too lazy to edit that out. Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 195. I am your host, Adam Mangum. It's a double guest edition of the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. First up, Jay Yeomans of the Deseret News and JMoneySports.com. He comes in to talk about Jimmer's chances of making the Spurs and how does he exactly rank the top 100 defensive football players in history. Jerem Jordan then joins me to talk about Jimmer, Tyler Hawes, and we also discuss top storylines for fall camp and pick our favorite summer movie. Again, this is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout and get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Welcoming to the podcast a first-time guest, Deseret News contributor and all-around blogger, Jay Yeomans. Jay, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Adam. I appreciate it.
The reason I want to have you on was, well, because you follow BYU athletes in the pros as much as anybody on your blog, which we'll get to that in a second. But you wrote a piece for the Deseret News. It's now a couple weeks old, but since no basketball has happened, it's still relevant. And plus, we're BYU fans, so we can never get enough Jimmer talk. You talked about his signing with San Antonio. The headline on the article was, "Can Jimmer Fredette resurrect his career in San Antonio?" So walk us through what your thought process was as you looked at this, as far as the roster and the minutes, and what you think that roster situation in San Antonio looks like, either for good or ill for Jimmer.
Well, when I heard the news, there were some red flags that popped up, and although everybody seemed and First of all, everybody seemed to love it, that going to Greg Popovich and such a great situation like the Spurs. But I'm lucky enough that my wife is a diehard Spurs fan, so I actually see more Spurs games than I see my own teams in the NBA. So I knew exactly what was going on, and I had seen them play all summer long, thanks in part to the fact that Brandon Davies was playing on their summer league team in Vegas. So I had known that they'd already, I'd known about their transactions. So I knew that Corey Joseph was gone and Marco Bellinelli was gone. But I also knew that they traded for Ray McCallum, that they had signed Jonathan Simmons, and I knew how well Kyle Anderson was playing. Plus, I knew of their free agent signings. So I thought, well, I need to get out this information to kind of bridle the excitement that was out there, because when you only have one roster spot and you're not given a fully guaranteed deal, it's not something that, I mean, well, it's a positive sign. It's better than sitting on the bench in New Orleans behind Tony Douglas or Nate Walters or whoever was playing in front of him on a 10-day contract last year. It's not a guarantee that he makes the team. And on top of that, if he does, it's not a guarantee that he's dressing every night.
Right. Oh, yeah. Not as he's already seen in his career, even when you're on the team. So you mentioned a couple of players that might stand in his way. Tell us who those players are and why you think they may be a little bit more likely to get minutes than Jimmer would in the preseason and therefore better chance of making the team.
Okay, so right now they have 14 guaranteed contracts. And if you look, they've already obviously still got Tony Parker as their starting point guard. So there's no question that he's still going to be their starting point guard. So that's not even an option. I really don't think that they brought him in to handle the ball. But obviously he'd fit into that 1-2 spot at some point if he makes the roster. The other guys that they have that can run the point, they still have Patty Mills, who's been serviceable the last few years, and they gave him a contract not just this summer but the summer before, so he's going to be there for a little while. And the move that probably hurts him the most from gaining any minutes at the point guard spot is they traded for, after they lost Corey Joseph to the Raptors, he signed a huge deal in Toronto, is they traded for Ray McCallum. And Jimmer and McCallum obviously are really well aware of each other because they actually played with each other in Sacramento the year that Schirmer's last year there was McCown's rookie year. And he's more of a true point guard. He's not a great shooter, but he's a better defender, which is going to come as no shock to most anybody who loves Jimmer, because, you know, we don't see him get to play a great deal of defense, and that's always been his knock. But the other guy that goes in there is Kyle Anderson. Now, Kyle Anderson, to me, is a little bit of a worry, because if he's on the floor, he can play the one, the two, or the three. And if he's getting minutes, then there's not going to be a whole lot of extra minutes available there, at least at that point guard spot, because, I mean, you've got four point guards, two of which they've used a lot, and Kyle Anderson, of which, he was our first-round pick last year. So he's those four guys stand in his way at the point, and obviously Anderson at the two as well. And then the other guys you look at the two is they re-signed Danny Green, and he's going to be a starter again. And then they signed Jonathan Simmons. Now, Jonathan Simmons has been playing in the D League, but he got a fully guaranteed deal, from my understanding, for this first year as part of a two-year deal. But he knows their system already. He's been playing in Austin, their D League affiliate, for the last 2 years. So he knows exactly what's going on and what's going to be there. So that doesn't leave Jimmer much of an opportunity for minutes if he does make the roster. The one thing he does have for him, if he does, is the fact that Greg Popovich doesn't kill his guys. You look in New Orleans, where Jimmer was last year, and Monty Williams, before he got the boot, he plays his guys 38 to 45 minutes a night. So there's no room for any of your bench guys, right?
Yeah.
And in that scenario, I mean, then Jimmer wouldn't probably even make the roster, but Popovich, he doesn't play his guys like that. They play 30 minutes a night, 28 minutes a night, 24 minutes a night. Obviously, they still have Manu as well, who re-signed, but he only played 22 minutes a night last year. So if Jimmer can make the roster, that's his saving grace right there, is Popovich doesn't kill his guys. He sits his guys. So he has, I'm pretty sure last year, Tony Parker played like 30 minutes a game, and then Patty Mills played 16 and Corey Joseph played 18. So they spaced it out in the regular season because they play for the playoffs. So that would be a good sign, but there are definitely a lot of obstacles in his way.
Yeah. Yeah. There are definitely a lot of obstacles. To prove your point, last year the Spurs had one guy over 30 minutes a game. That was Kawhi Leonard. And then New Orleans had four guys over 30 minutes a game, which is, and since they weren't that, I don't know. I think Popovich probably knows what he's doing a little bit more than any of the coaches they've had in New Orleans lately. That's the one thing, of course, everyone's excited about, Jay, is the Popovich factor and the fact that why sign a guy like Jimmer, who's a potential distraction just because he's this college legend that people still talk about, maybe that Tim Tebow factor. Why sign him at all? Unless Popovich thinks somewhere in his head or someone on his staff thinks, this Jimmer guy, we might be able to turn him into something. Do you think that's a relevant possibility, or you just think this is a team filling out their preseason roster with as many pieces as they can get?
I don't think they would have given him any guaranteed money if they didn't think he had a really good shot of making a roster. That's just my opinion. But I think they would have given him a camp invite without giving him guaranteed money unless they thought there was a chance. The distractions, they are huge. I know that. And whenever I write a story about Jimmer and that ends up on my blog, it blows up like crazy. So, and then when they're on the Deseret News, they're umpteen times like bigger, but they're just massive stories because everybody loves him. But he has a marketable skill. As much as everybody says, well, he shot 18.8% from the 3-point line last year, that's not indicative of the skill set that he has. And we saw that for 4 years at BYU. And every time he's had an opportunity to play meaningful minutes in the NBA, he's produced. Now, in the last 3 years, he's played every game where he played at least 20 minutes. He scored at least 10 points every game. That happened, but three times. In those three games, he scored 9 points each time. he can produce when he's on the floor. I mean, he showed that last year when he played San Antonio, and he went nuts at the end of the third quarter and into the fourth quarter in a game that they would have won had not Omer Sheik tipped in a lob pass at the buzzer on his own bucket to push the game to overtime. And so he shows that when he gets time, he's got an NBA skill set. You can't teach guys how to, as much as anybody tells you, if you're not a shooter, you're never going to be a shooter by the time you get to that point in your career.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely, that is a skill, and that's what most of us thought would be the thing that kept him in the NBA if he was able to stick and do well, which, of course, most of us BYU fans thought. Let's move off Jimmer for a second, and there are a couple other topics I wanted to talk with you about. You did a series of lists. You do this on your blog. You've done it for Deseret News. Like on your blog now, it's, I think, best offensive players. Is that right?
Who's on there right now?
Yeah, the best defensive players in BYU school history. And you did some lists of, you know, best at each position for the Deseret News. How do you approach that? I mean, especially when you talk about in the history of a program. I don't know when you were born, but my BYU memory starts in the early 80s and doesn't really get good until the mid to late 80s. So anything before that, I'll rank seasons and stuff, but I'm kind of at that point, you know, just making it up. But how do you approach that, and how do you determine, you know, who is going to be the best player and best defensive player in school history?
Okay, so it's interesting because I've actually had this question a lot. And while I have my favorites and guys that I didn't like, I'm sure like you, there's guys that you just loved when they played at BYU, and other guys are just like, yeah, I'm not a big fan. I take all that bias out, and most of the time I don't even put the names because I just plug it into an equation I came up with to make it fair. Because stats don't translate over generations. At least, this, of course, defensively, they don't translate. Offense, they do a little more, but then it depends on which generation.
Right.
So I've come up with just a system. So you plug in the numbers, and then whoever has the highest point total is the best player, and then you just rank them on down. And those numbers are based on how many years they were in the program, if they lettered, if they were a starter, if they made honorable mention all-conference or second team or, of course, first team all-conference, defensive player of the year, if they have all-time records at the school, if they have, if they led the nation or the conference in totals, and then if they were All-Americans, whether honorable mention, fourth team, as in the case of Ryan Denny, or third, second, or first team. And then I assess point values to those, and then I just spit out the number and then go from there, and then the write-ups then just come, because I think it's impossible for me to judge an offensive lineman, or sorry, since we're talking about defense, a defensive lineman against a safety, and when the defensive lineman played in 1987 and the safety played in 1962. You can't
right.
compare those numbers.
Yeah, no, it, you know, you ended up ranking, I don't know, 110. You had like 10 honorable mentions, and then you do a top 100, which I don't know that I've seen a top 100 defensive players in BYU history. So it's quite an undertaking, and you've got a little write-up on each of them. I wanted to ask you a couple that stuck out to me as maybe not surprises, but Bronson Kafusi came in at number 90, and of course he's still got a year left, but after reading your write-up, obviously he's put up pretty big numbers in his career. Probably deserves to be there. But then if you look at the top 10, which is, of course, where everyone's going to look and give you grief if their favorite is not in there, I don't see anybody that was too surprising. I think Shad Hansen at linebacker at number 8, Bob Davis at linebacker at number 7, but that's just because people won't have heard of them because they weren't around then, and then a couple guys in the 70s. But once you get to the top 4, Kyle Morrell, Kyle Vannoy, Rob Morris, Jason Buck, you can split hairs about the order, but I don't think you're going to have many people argue about that those aren't the top four guys in history. Have you caught some flack for some of the order on this defensive list yet?
It's funny. So it goes on my blog first, and then it ends up on the Deseret News usually a day or two later. So it's up on the Deseret News right now.
Yeah.
And most of the comments I've got are just, most people actually don't like the length. That's the biggest grief I've gotten so far. The ones that have given me negative feedback, it's just been that they don't really have the time to click through and look at 110, 115 guys. Which I understand. I mean, if you're sitting down at the computer at work, do you really want to take an hour and a half
to go through 100 defensive players? Probably not if your boss is going to be walking by anytime soon.
Exactly. You're probably hiding it like you're looking at something inappropriate when you're just trying to follow the Cougars.
Right.
But, I mean, other than that, most of the people, I mean, I've got comments about some of the guys who were NFL guys like Hans Olsen and Brett Kiesel that they were too low. But I try to eliminate all of that completely and not look at how amazing these guys were in high school or how amazing they were, their longevity in the pros, because then that's a completely different list.
Right.
I wanted to look at exactly what they did at BYU and nothing else and factored in nothing else, because then that way it's your BYU and not just, well, this guy's the best football player. I mean, I get that when I do the when I've done some of the offensive lists, everybody's like, well, Steve Young's the only one in the Hall of Fame, and I completely understand that. Steve Young was an amazing, amazing quarterback when he was with the 49ers, and he was fantastic at BYU, but I'm not factoring that in. You know, I'm not factoring in that pro aspect of things.
Yeah, Kiesel, I have no problem with him being an honorable mention. At the time, I did not think, if you had told me Kiesel, who's a very fine player at BYU, would play in the NFL as long as he has, I wouldn't have believed you. He didn't blow your doors off like some of these other guys did, who some of them did very well in the pros, but many of them, including, you know, Rob Morris at the top of the list, you know, had a little bit of an NFL career, but not a ton. Get you out on this last one. As you look at coming into this season, besides Bronson Kafusi, is there anybody you think that is on that team, the defense that hopefully will be much better than last year, that you think may end up on this list, even though at this point most of them are too young and wouldn't have anywhere near the numbers to get anywhere close to this?
There's a couple of guys who I really like who showed a bunch of flashes last year to be great, great players. Now, it depends on how they developed, of course. But it's Sione Takitaki and Fred Warner.
Yeah.
Those two guys excite me to no end with their ability to make plays on the field. Now, it's a matter of if they're grounded enough and they learn enough and they work hard enough, because some of those kind of guys, I mean, guys who've come in with all kinds of hype and then produce a little bit, then they fall off and they're done. And other guys come in and have, you know, make good impressions when they're young, and then they just explode and are just dominant for three more years. And those are the two guys that I'm looking at that can make that jump.
Yeah, I agree with you. Both of them, and BYU will need them to make that jump this year to kind of solidify. Well, Jay, thanks for coming on. We'll of course let people know how to find you. You can find him on Twitter at @JMoneySport at @JMoney3334. Make sure I get that right. And then of course your blog that I had mentioned, and you can find that 100 best players and defensive players in BYU history at jmoneysports.com. And you do lots of tracking of guys in the pros, including every game of Jimmer and Brandon Davies' careers, I think, or is it just the last couple of years?
I didn't start doing the blog until 2 years ago,
okay.
So I've done every game that Brandon Davies has played, including every game he played in France last year.
Okay.
And then 2 years for Jimmer, but every single game. So I'm glued to the TV or to the radio for every single one of those games.
So
and then
when Haas is playing in Spain, we're going to see daily or game by game updates on Tyler Haas.
Yep, on Tyler Haas, and then we'll probably do a weekly to bi-weekly on everybody from the BYU path, like Lee Kamard and Jonathan Tavernari, and I'll probably. Because I did a game-by-game last year on Matt Carlino at Marquette. There's a real good chance he's going to be playing somewhere this year, and I'll probably do it on Carlino too, even though A lot of BYU fans aren't real big fans of him, but I love that kid. So yeah. I'll back in till the day he's done.
All right, that's fantastic. Well, definitely check out Jay on Twitter, at the blog, jmoneysports.com, and then when his contributions at the Deseret News as well. Thanks, Jay, for coming on, and we'll have you on again sometime.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Pinch hitting this week for my brother Matt, frequent guest and friend of the podcast, Jerem Jordan of BYU TV and BYU Radio. Jerem, welcome back.
What?
So
that's still funny to me, obviously.
Yes, yes, you and me both. It's 15 years, maybe longer than that. Is that 20 years?
It's the best. I'm still doing that in the halls of BYU TV. People look at me like, what?
What is he doing?
I know, so I'm glad you responded appropriately.
Well, I'm sure the students are like, dang old people.
Like, I'm 31!
I'm 31, I'm not old!
Yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, it's happening. It's all right. It happens to all of us. I'm 39 now, so actually a lot of the things that I liked in high school and college are becoming, you know, popular again. So it'll happen. It'll happen for you. So one of the good things about having you on is that you watch movies, unlike my brother Matt, who occasionally sees a movie.
Matt.
I know he uses kids an excuse, but I have as many kids as he does, and it's not an excuse. It's priorities. That's what I say. It's priorities. So Jerem, best movie this summer, and it can be one of the geeky movies that you and I love to talk about, or just the best one you saw.
Yeah, I'll go Age of Ultron. I thought it was really good.
I did like that.
You know, a fastball down the middle, but I loved it. And there have been some good movies, but that's the one that's been the best to me.
Yeah,
and I expected it to be really good. It's hard because that first one was like, wow, that was really good. And I thought the second one delivered.
Yeah. I that is my favorite as well this summer. Though I have to say, just because I like the Terminator series, I did like Terminator Genesis. I mean, if you don't like the first two Terminator movies, number one, there's lots of references to the first two movies. But number
two,
oh
my goodness,
yeah. But if you don't like those, I had some people tell me same thing. Oh, that was my favorite. A guy at work, I said, oh, Avengers: Age of Ultron was terrible. I said, oh really? Did you like the first one? No, I hate all those Marvel movies.
It's like, I also hate Christmas and Easter.
But who pays,
whoa, buddy.
He took his wife, his son, who he said also isn't interested, and his wife says she kind of likes them. And so you paid on opening weekend, you paid like 30-something bucks plus, you know, 40-something with food to go see a movie you don't even want to see? I don't know.
Yeah, that's on you, man.
Yeah, that's not the movie's fault. That's your fault.
your problem.
So let's jump into some headlines for the week, some of which you guys have covered on the ever-excellent BYU Sports Nation on BYU TV and BYU Radio each day. Though you weren't there yesterday for one of the stories we'll talk about, so we won't spoil that quite yet. So we'll start with some Cougars in the Pros edition of this segment. So Jimmer, since you and I talked last, Jimmer signed with the Spurs. It's kind of old news. Match made in heaven, or going to be kind of the same old, and next year we'll be having the same conversation of whether Jimmer can keep his NBA career going?
Yeah, I think we're going to be having the same conversation. I got to know Jimmer really well, went to Glen Falls a couple of times. Love the dude. Think he's a class act. But I'm just not sure there's a spot for him. And I don't think a team is willing to hand over the keys to the offense to him. He is an excellent scorer, as we saw at BYU, but it took a while for even Dave Rose. It took 2.5 years for him to go, oh, he's best used with the ball in his hand every second. It's a really he's not Carmelo Anthony in that he stops everything, but like it just needs, he's high maintenance offensively, right?
Yes.
But if any team can figure out a way to use him effectively outside of that, because that's not going to work for him in the NBA. It is the Spurs. We had the Spurs play-by-play on, and I said, how much more basketball is in him if this doesn't work out with the Spurs? And he said, oh, I think plenty is out there for him. I love Jimmer, but I'm afraid that if this doesn't work, that he's going to be with Real Madrid or Obradoiro whatever, like Tyler's team, in Spain next year. It's my worry. And let's remember, it's a training camp contract. It's not even a regular contract. He's got to win the job in training camp. So he still has work to do. And trust me, I don't like the Spurs. I appreciate what they do, but I'm all in on this, because if Jimmer can't make in the NBA, that's not a good sign for future 6'2" white dudes that go to BYU.
No. No, it's not. They need to be a little taller, apparently. It's interesting, because when he turned pro, with very few exceptions, people that know more about basketball than us, top talent evaluators, thought he had an opportunity to not maybe be an NBA star, but be a contributor for years to come. And here we are sitting, 4 or 5 years later. And the crazy part is, though, any story about Jimmer, it isn't just BYU fans. People go nuts for Jimmer. Still.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it's funny, because Tebow is so polarizing, right? It, for some reason, Jimmer is still a thing. Like, yes. It's been 4 years.
Yeah. Well,
it's been four full NBA seasons. Played at BYU.
Anybody that loves college basketball, and paid attention for that year and a half where he was at the top of the game, it was, you don't see that very often, right? You don't see a player like him. So it's crazy, but it's not totally weird that, 3, 4, 5 years later, people still care about the Jimmer. But hopefully it works with the Spurs. But I'm kind of with you. I'm not seeing it, but maybe Pop will figure something out. Tyler Hawes will definitely not be playing in the NBA, barring something strange. He's headed to, I don't know, what did you call them when you translated it? Friends of the Basketball?
The Workshop Friends of the Basketball.
Yes, he's...
That's a literal translation.
Yes, so the Workshop Friends of the Basketball, have you done t-shirts of that yet?
Not yet.
We're
working on it.
We need to do that. So what do we expect? I mean, Haas will be in Europe. Is his NBA hopes and career, is this kind of the end? I mean, he didn't even get a lot of minutes in the summer league.
Yeah, I don't see him in the NBA. I mean, he's got a shot where he just tears it up, blah, blah, blah. But, like, J.C. Carroll, former Utah State Aggie, is, like, king of Spain or something over there. He's right. Crushing it and winning titles and making coin. But that's the life that he would live. He can live like a king over there, or he can come in the NBA and be the, sixth dude off the bench or whatever. So, maybe just live in Spain. So for Tyler, I know he's very excited, and I've talked to him at length about this off camera. He is excited to go play in Spain, and it's a new adventure. And obviously he just got married, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And so exciting times for him. What is he going to do there? I have no clue. I've never watched a second of Spanish league basketball. I have no idea, but I'm all of a sudden going to be bookmarking Eurobasket or whatever it is .com. To watch, and it'll be fun. I hope he can do something, because BYU has guys out there still playing professionally in Europe. You've got Charles Abuo, who's made the waves around Africa. Kina Young was still doing stuff in Asia. Lee Kamard is in Belgium. So there's a precedent for Terrell Day, played for a while. I think that Luis Lemes is in Brazil playing. Rafael Araujo, Jonathan Tavernier in Italy. So this is a thing, with BYU hoops. BYU is not producing a ton of NBA players, but you can play, you can keep playing basketball. You don't quite have to go to your uncle's firm or whatever, right out of college. So there's a shot for him to do something.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, I mean, he could live like a king over there instead of playing with Topeka in the developmental league,
Seriously, and that's like a step above church ball.
Yes, yes. I much, much better to be the king of Spain than the king of Topeka. Switching to NFL here for a second, but still Cougars in the pros. You guys had on today's show, you had Jordan Leslie on, if I'm not getting my days mixed up, and he's here in Minnesota with the Vikings, hoping to make the roster. Paul Lasique, there was an article, ESPN, I think, had him as a guy that's making a solid impression, but still a long shot to make it. Are we going to see, is this a year where nobody makes it after a couple of years of having guys drafted? Or do you think one of these guys, Lasicki, Leslie, or somebody else is going to stick on an NFL roster?
I think somebody's going to make it. And since the NFL practice squad increased from 6 to 10, I believe, 2 years ago, more guys kind of sit on the B team, if you will, ready to go. That's what Spencer Adley did last year with the Raiders. He was on the Raiders, practice squad all year, converted to like tight end. And then the last 2 weeks of the regular season, they brought him on the 53. So now he's kind of part of the crew, right? Right. Daniel Sorensen made the 53, then got back down to the practice squad and came back up. So guys can do this. And I think this is a positive thing because the guys that BYU recruits are typically not NFL draft pick kind of guys, right? How many guys get drafted that are not four or five? That's just what BYU gets, right? But a guy like Dennis Pitta can become one of the best tight ends in the league. Go from walk on to that. Like, those stories happen at BYU. Chad Lewis, those stories happen. So my pick, I've been saying that I think Jordan Leslie is going to make the Vikings. I still hold to that. Lasicki has one dude he's got to battle with the Cardinals. Alani Fua with the Cardinals, DeAndre Wesley with the Ravens, Robertson Daniel with the Raiders, Wani Unga is still out there. He's going by Devin, I think, now, like he did at Oregon State, but he's with the Giants. So there's guys out there. I think Jordan's got a shot. I think he has the best skill set at his position of any player. Now, the Vikings receiving core, that's obviously going to have to be the issue that he's going to have to get through is, whether he can make that team, does he fit that team's offense, whatnot. But that's my guy. That's my pick, Jordan Love.
Yeah, I think what may keep him on the roster is special teams because he is a guy that will mix it up, a great blocker. He doesn't really care what he has to do, right? I mean, he'll do whatever a coach asks him to do, which is one of the reasons he showed up at BYU, right, to play for Mendenhall and then had such a good season. I mean, I don't know if he'll – They've got a decent receiving core. It's not great, but they've got some good guys there. So there's, some depth that he may not be able to. But man, if you're on the NFL roster and on punts and kickoffs and stuff, if you're Jordan Leslie, that's probably still a good deal because the dream's alive, right?
Yeah, and here's another thing that's fun. So everyone knows about the blind side, right? So his family, to a degree, took in Bulls guard Jimmy Butler in this similar fashion. So he is best friend / brothers with Jimmy Butler. So he knows what it's like to be a pro, to come out of like a smaller school, to make it in league and become somebody, right?
Yeah.
So that backing, I think he's got extra motivation. He's kind of seen it happen. And he has a great work ethic. The only issue is when he's starting on Sunday or Monday Night Football, we discussed them today, what college is he going to say? And our recommendation was to say BYU-TEP.
BYU-TEP. That's good. That's good.
or do his high school. So I don't know.
He did not commit, I noticed on the pod.
He didn't. I was like, come on, man.
He waffled. He waffled on you. But, it is hard. I love that fifth senior transfer rule. I mean, if it was me, I would say.
Isn't that a joke that's amazingly awesome?
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally awesome.
It's such a joke.
And they want to like close the loophole, and I'm just sitting here like, yes, yes, let's take more freedom away from these kids and put more control in the coaches who are making all the money. But anyway,
do you remember the most ridiculous one was what was his name? The Duke guard that played quarterback at Syracuse, Greg.
Paulus.
He's coaching now. Greg Paulus.
Yeah.
The dude plays hoops at Duke. And then he plays quarterback at Syracuse.
Yeah, yeah.
How bad was Syracuse football if they had to take a basketball guard?
They were not good.
Russell Wilson, of course, all those guys.
Yeah, they were not good. But again, the rules are what they were. So Jordan Leslie took advantage of them, and I'm glad he did. So we're gonna do a little over under here with you, Jerem, on Cougars and the Pros. Okay,
over.
So over. He's already going over, no matter what I say. A Jimmer Hall of Fame. No, just kidding.
Under.
Jimmer, I was gonna say 1.5 more seasons in on an NBA roster. Are you taking the over or the under?
Under.
You're taking the under.
I want to go over, but
I think I agree with you.
My like shtick at BYU TV is like trying to call it like it is.
Yes.
I've had one conversation with one
that's
athlete
your stick?
Of note that
that's your stick.
Well,
oh, okay. Now I get it.
It's becoming that of like, hey, I'm going to call it like it is. And Spencer is the optimist, which is great. You know,
you've got a balance, counterbalance. And when the Logan takeover comes too, you got to balance him as well.
Taysom Hill, best player in the universe. I'm like,
yes.
What?
In the universe. Wow, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I agree with you on that one. Tyler Hawes next. Over under 0.5 points scored in an NBA career.
Under.
I'm going to go over. Over. I think he does well in Europe, gets a sniff in a year or two, and makes a roster and or gets a, you know, a 10, 15-day contract, whatever they are now, and scores a bucket or two, but not much more than that. That's my hope.
That would be great.
That's my hope. Yeah. That's probably
I
do have the blue goggles
you
guys gave me.
Think's going to happen.
So. Yeah, I'm gonna put those on for. Oh yeah. Oh, actually, I see him as a 10-time All-Star.
Starter in the league now.
Yeah, 10-time All-Star. All right. Moving on to Dennis Pitta, who's gonna open up injured a little bit, but over under another. And let me pull up his stat page. I had it right here. His career best was in 2012. He had 61 catches for 669 yards and 7 touchdowns. Over under another 60 catch season for Dennis Pitta in his career.
Now, remember, he called me dead weight on BYU Sports.
Yes,
so
yes,
with that
he did.
In mind,
with that in mind,
Can
you stay objective?
I do love me some Dennis Pitta.
Yeah,
I'll go under. Like I'm concerned for Dennis because he's on the PUP list right now, physically unable to perform, and that's not good. You know, He has the potential to be the best non-quarterback skill position guy we've ever had in the NFL.
Yes.
And maybe he is already. I don't know. That's up for debate. But I'll go under. Like, I need to see him healthy to believe that, one, he's going to even play in a game again, let alone that he's going to, you know, replicate what he did in 2012.
Yeah, I'm going to go over. I just think he's young enough. He's got a few more years. And assuming he can come back and play at a fairly similar level, I'm gonna tentatively take over. I think he's got one more, but only one more season like that. The problem with being a tight end is by the time you get into your middle 30s, he's 30 now, you're usually pretty cooked. So hopefully he comes back, but we shall see. Last one, Austin Colley is doing pretty well in the CFL. Probably has found a place for him to finish his career. But let's talk NFL with Colley for a second. Over under 0.5 more catches in his career in the NFL for Austin Colley.
I'll go under based on his comments preseason with the BC Lions. Just he's really jaded with how perception got him out of the league, right?
Right.
Because of the multiple concussions. And maybe there's some validity to that, right? That, say, you know, it seems like he kind of blames the media and the role the media played and exaggerating, you know, what happened with him. It's like, maybe you had a lot of concussions and maybe it's good that you're not in the NFL. You know, I don't know all the facts associated with that, but I think I don't see in this era of safety and concussion being such a negative buzzword. I don't see another team giving him a chance, even though he was pretty good with the Patriots just two seasons ago.
Yeah, it's actually a little crazy to me. And Matt and I have talked about him on the podcast a bunch, and we're Patriots fans, so I saw him play for the Patriots, and he looked good. Now, granted, it was a couple of games there, but I mean, he was pretty good with Indianapolis those first couple of years as a slot guy who had the opportunity with his speed to be more than that. But man, I'll tell you, I don't think anybody's going to touch him in the NFL, which is crazy in that, of course, the NFL will put convicted felons back on the field.
Seriously.
And quite frankly, I don't buy that they really care that much about the concussion thing. I don't totally agree with Austin, but I do agree with him that the media's focus on his concussions is a big factor in teams saying, I don't want that press when I sign him. For a guy that's...
He was kind of a poster child for concussions. Played against him.
Yeah, he's going to be third or fourth wide receiver on my team. I don't need the headache. I'll sign this other guy who's younger and doesn't have a history of that.
That was a pun.
Did I just make a pun?
The headache.
Oh.
We don't want the headache.
Oh, that's a terrible pun. my gosh, I should go back and edit
unintentional that. Pun, 5-yard penalty.
Yeah, that's absolutely terrible. Luckily, I can edit that out. I probably won't, though. I'm too lazy. I'm too lazy to edit that out. So let's go back to a couple other. I've got a few Twitter questions we'll get you out on here, Jerem. First one is from Andre Hutchins. That's at AC_Hutchins on Twitter. He asked about realistic expectation for BYU's first four football games. Will the Cougs beat Nebraska? If BYU starts 2-0, how much blue Kool-Aid will Cougar Nation be drinking heading into week 3? Visions of grandeur. And then he's got a trophy and a football emoticon there on his tweet. So we'll break this down. What are the percent chance you think BYU beats Nebraska? 60, 70? 95?
I've said 40, 40, 60.
Oh, it's higher than 40. They're not good.
Yeah, it is. But how good is BYU's defense? That's the question. I'm not concerned at all about BYU's offense. And that wasn't even the problem last year. BYU's putting up points.
Yeah.
In fact, I think, remember BYU's goal is 24? I think they were only sub-24 one game, I think. They scored 30 at Boise State and lost by 25. The defense was bad.
Very bad.
I think this offense will be just as good or better. They bring back all of these weapons. Can BYU rush effectively? I feel like Taysom Hill is going to pick up right where he left off. 4-0, 67% passer, rushing for 100, throwing for, 200-something. As long as he gets 300 total per game, especially in the September game, BYU's going to be in a good position.
Right.
Now, will the defense – the offense will win them games. That saying, defense wins championships, garbage. This is the modern era. The offense wins you the game. The defense puts you in a position to possibly win the game. Okay, so can Bronco figure it out with those guys, especially the secondary? BYU has playmakers in the middle. They shuffled a lot of them. I think they were freshly poured concrete. I think this season they solidify and they're rock solid. The secondary. Now, there's where the questions are. Can Takanaka, Badger, Prater, Davis, Hanneman, Nakua, can these guys bring it? And if they can, I think BYU's in business. So what does BYU do in September? I think 2-2 would be pretty stinking good. And I think Nebraska and Michigan are your most likely wins on it.
Yeah, I think Nebraska and Michigan are definitely the most likely. I'd feel better about Michigan if we had them in the first game. As opposed to Harbaugh gets enough time, he's going to figure out who he's got, who's good, and he's going to play him. And I have no doubt he can do that. Now, he's not a miracle worker in that he still has to deal with the hand he's got, which is, quite frankly, not a ton of talent last year on that roster. There was some, but man, they...
Especially on offense.
Yeah, especially on offense. But
they have a quarterback now. That's the issue. They have a decent quarterback, Iowa kid, Jake Rudock.
Yes.
Who put up decent numbers at Iowa. Like, he's kind of an 8-win, like, quarterback kind of numbers. And that, couple that with their defense was top 25, even in a 5-win season. And they were in the Ohio State game. At Ohio State, they're down 7 with, 5 minutes to go. And it gets away from them. But they competed. So, I'm with you. Week 4, I'm a little scared of week 4. I'd rather be in Utah's position. They host in week 1, which, by the way, will be the most watched Thursday night college football game in the history of the world.
Yes.
Everyone's going to watch that game.
Yes, everyone will watch it. And Harbaugh's back. Utah destroyed him last year. Great storyline.
Utah's going to have a roof with Utah written on it, apparently, funded by the people. I don't know if you saw that story.
Yeah, I saw it. I try to avoid all mentions of Utah that I can.
The giant Pac-12 logo on the roof.
Of course they will. I mean, they'll all be. I'm probably have it tattooed on their biceps.
Quick, funny story.
Okay, so far away.
I was in Houston last week. I went to College Station. I went to the bookstore and I said, "Do you have any SEC stickers or any SEC anything?" And they said, "No, it's all about Texas A&M." And I said, "Thank you.
Thank you. That's all." You don't realize how much that means to me. Yeah, that's great. Well, here's my number for Nebraska. Here's why I think we beat Nebraska. Last year, they were, according to Football Outsiders, they were 86th in the country against the run. Now, I know we're going to pass more, and I know we got talent on the outside, but this is a running team with Taysom Hill, has been when he's been the quarterback and healthy. And they can't stop us. They can't stop the running game. I think even if the defense isn't very good, I think Nebraska's defense isn't good enough. So that's my little spiel.
That's a good point. And they lost Randy Gregory to the draft. They lost Zaire Anderson, a 100-plus tackle guy.
Yep.
They still have some good D tackles. They still return Nate Gary at safety. So they've got some players. And you're right. BYU's offense is predicated upon how well they can run the ball. Remember, Taysom Hill, do not throw a passing touchdown if BYU won at Texas by 34.
Yes.
If BYU can run the ball, and you're right, and Spencer said this, Texas is a lot like this Nebraska game.
Yes.
In a lot of ways, a lot of ways.
Yes, it is.
If BYU can get some turnovers and rush well, it could be a great day. And then to Andre's, third point, if BYU's 2-0, how much blue Kool-Aid will there be? Yeah, there'll be a ton.
If you beat
Nebraska on the road and then beat Boise State, you're a ranked team going into UCLA, which is going to be the toughest game on BYU's schedule by far.
And might be the game of the week. I haven't looked at that week's schedule. But if we were 2-0, UCLA's undefeated. They're considered by some. You had Dan Wolken on your program yesterday. You weren't on the show, but he mentioned that he thinks they're a national championship contender, UCLA.
That's a load of crock. No true freshman-led team is a national championship contender.
I agree with you. But
I don't care how good Josh Rosen is.
But they still may be, by the end of the year, a top 15, with the true freshman.
And they're UCLA.
Yes. So
they'll be overrated.
Yes.
They've made one Rose Bowl since 98.
Well, they play in it. They're sick of playing in it. It's not much fun to go to a Rose Bowl. You see it all the time.
So they lose a couple so they don't have to be the Pac-12 team.
Let's go to a different stadium. Why not?
They're the most over. Spencer called them the most overrated program in America.
Oh, man, he got great hammered. Merit.
But trust me, they're good. Like, that would be the best win by far if BYU were to get that one.
Well, and the funny thing is, we'll know at the end of the year what the best win is, right? I mean, for all I know, all we know, it's Boise is the team that at the end of the year been the best. I mean, we'll see, but I'm UCLA as of right now. I agree with you. It would be the best win. Let me get you out on one more question related to Taysom. Justin Whiting on Twitter, that's at JN Whiting, says, is lack of QB depth the biggest concern for BYU, or are we just hosed if Hill goes down? So we've got camp starting on Saturday. Right, fall camp starts on Saturday. We're gonna get a feel in the next couple of weeks who the number two quarterback is. I mean, Bronco may not tell us that, at least at the beginning. But is this the biggest concern, or does it really not matter? Because if Hill goes down like he did last year, whoever it is gonna have that learning curve when they get in that could put us behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I'm not concerned. I'm really not, because I think Tanner Mangum is going to be a stud, and BYU really believes that. And if he's not there, it's serious trouble. But guess what? If Taysom Hill gets hurt, all heck breaks loose anyway. My biggest concern is the secondary. I'm not worried about a backup as much as I am a couple starters that don't have, the experience or have proven themselves. Granted, I like the talent in the secondary, but there is some concern. Yeah. So Tanner Mangum, he's the guy. Bo Hodge is coming in. Any rhetoric related to competition for the backup is just that, because Tanner Mangum is the heir apparent and has been such for like 5 years. And the coaching staff, like, it just comes out through them. Tanner Mangum's the next guy. That 2016 schedule, like,
He's the play 60 kid, like warming up his shoulder with Cam Newton. Like, that's Tanner Mangum right now.
Yeah, he's telling Taysom Hill's mom that Taysom that your mom is.
I'm your mom's favorite player.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Tanner's not doesn't have that kid's attitude, at least externally. We already had that quarterback once before a few years ago.
And he went on a mission, and a previous Elite 11 guy didn't, and that makes a lot of difference. That's all I have to say about that.
And on top of that, as that article that came out a month or so ago that really kind of laid it out of Seattle, is he had other stuff going on in his life, unfortunately, that at least as a fan, I think most of us were completely unaware of, that, you know, these are human beings. So that stuff will affect people, even if we'd prefer that they were robots, which it was a good RoboCop reference today. On the show, I'm pretty sure that Brian had absolutely no idea what you were talking about.
Vice versa. It happens more often in the men's volleyball matches, actually, because Steve Vail will quote some 80s or 90s movie, and I'm like, ooh, I was six, or whatever, you know.
But I get those ones.
Here's how you know, I'm just quiet. Like, I'll laugh if I get the reference, but if I don't, I'm just quiet.
Yeah, he referenced one of the broadcasts last year, I think it was last year, he referenced one of my favorite 80 movies, Real Genius, with Val Kilmer. Have you ever seen that one?
See, I'm quiet right now.
Yeah, see, you're quiet. And you did exactly that. You did kind of the pleasant laugh, and I texted Matt because he was watching the game, and I said, did you see that Real Genius? And then I realized Matt's closer to your age than he is to mine. And he's like, I had no idea what he just said. So I was like, well, that seems like as older brothers, we failed. We failed.
I'm glad you picked up the RoboCop. Like, I said RoboCop, but I dropped like two or three like distinct inside jokes about pop culture a show, and very rarely do people pick up on them. Like the tweet, like Justin D. Sweeney will be like, "Dude, love the reference to this," and I'm like, "Thank you. Someone is getting these."
Hey, that's funny.
Either music or
when I do that on our podcast, it's also Justin D. Sweeney.
He's the man.
Yeah, he is.
He's the man.
Well, Jerem, thanks for coming on the podcast, pinch hitting for Matt this week. We'll definitely have you on again soon. Of course, check out, you guys are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of fall camp starting on Saturday. Anything you want to pump regarding that?
Always. We're gonna Periscope all the interviews we can. So stay tuned to BYTV Sports on Twitter, and we're going to give you access to what's going on. Also, this Friday, regular show hours, but we're going to do a fall camp preview. We're going to break down all the positions, the burning questions, hopefully have some access to one of the assistant coaches. So should be a big show Friday.
Awesome. Encourage you guys to do that. And Periscope, by the way, is an app just for the uneducated. You can watch live.
Yeah.
I was explaining this to a bunch of my family recently.
You have to be underwater, and then you stick it out of the...
Yes,
and then
you stick it
everything
out, so you need a galaxy that's already waterproof. I said something to some of my family. I made a joke with, we ought to Periscope that. And my brother Matt and everyone's just staring at us. Like, what does that mean?
Crickets.
And so Matt breaks it out and says, here, let's go. And it was we just went to Mexico, because he said he just laid out the map, went to Mexico, and it was some dude doing a Periscope of his shopping trip to Sam's Club in Mexico.
Excellent. That's what Periscope, that's why it was created.
Apparently, hopefully you guys can put it to better use than that dude did. Well, thanks, Jerem, for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
Thank you. It's always a privilege, Jeff.
How you make it all alright, love. Crush me with the things you do, and I'll do for you anything too. Oh, sitting, smoking, feeling high. And in this moment, oh, it feels so right. Lovely lady, I'm at your feet. Oh, God, I want you so badly. And I wonder this could tomorrow.